Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me. In meditation class this week, I started talking about how a couple of people that I hear from a lot, one on a podcast, one on a TV show, keep using movies as references. And it rings a bell with me because I always use movies as references. And I think it's because movies are such great examples of stories well told. And so when something comes up, we have this story that's well told that is an example of that exact thing. I often look at yoga, especially when I'm talking to teachers about how to broaden their sense of what they teach as yoga. I'm looking at how does life match up the kinds of stories or lessons that are in the yoga texts, in the yoga philosophy. And so I start to develop this language around yoga. And one of the primary stories from yoga is that there's a two different perspective view of life, that on the one hand, we're a whole, we're part of everything, like a cell is a part of a body. And on the other hand, we have this individuality where we experience everything through our five senses. So the yogis found that they could improve one's sense of contentment, one sense of purpose, one sense of gracefulness, by being able to have both of those perspectives. And an image occurred to me this week of everything being energy, the whole of the universe, one giant bang of energy exploding out. And through some magic of awareness, consciousness, whateverness, that's philosophical in the speculative arena, we have carrying on our shoulders these devices, minds, that interpret this energy as stories, as personalities, as circumstances, when in fact there's only swirls of energy. So all of the practices that we do in yoga aim to affect this energy, to create shifts in the energy that make the story different. The improvements in the story are rarely that anything fundamental shifts. Rather, what happens is that the fundamental shift is within us, within our mind, within our thing we carry on our shoulders that's interpreting the energy, that we grow in our understanding, in our perspective, and then what we experience is different. This is so easy to see. You take someone who's in a bad mood. They do something. They do yoga. They go to a movie that's funny. They do something more destructive. They have a beer, right? Anything that you do that shifts up the energy, and suddenly the person's like, life is different from how it was a minute ago when you were unhappy. So you've got yoga practice as a way to bring about a shift in how you're orienting toward the energy of the world, to let you feel like the story is okay. It's the story, and I'm also the whole. And as long as I can maintain that balance, then life has a perspective to it. Right? Shift my perspective, get a higher view. Right? Michelle Obama said, when they go low, we go high. I mean, that could be a description of what yoga is about, right? Life in its mundane quality is challenging. But when you go high, when you find this connection with who you are in the greatest sense, then taking on that stuff that's of the mundane has a whole different look to it. So we made this great big shift from a sort of sleepy suburb with lots of cars driving around to a very busy Brooklyn street with car horns and people chatting and screaming at each other and stuff like that. I got to chat with Wendy a bit. We spoke about that and a few other things in our new living room. Our kitchen doesn't quite have a table, so we can't do our kitchen chats anymore, but we're still working on the final arrangements of the place. So let's head over to the living room, which has a really cool wall color. We've painted the apartment, and we're going to be sitting next to the Jupiter Glow wall and catching up a little bit on what's on our minds, yogically and otherwise. I hope you enjoy our chat. Here we go. Hey.
Hey.
Welcome to the What's Going On Freeform.
What's Going On Freeform in Crown Heights.
Yeah. In Brooklyn. Yeah. Brooklyn is an interesting place, you know. I mean, I've had friends who were not from here who pointed out that when you dig down and see where are things happening, they're happening in Brooklyn. Whether it's designy things or artistic things, there's a fair amount of energy here, creative energy here.
For sure.
And I think a lot of it comes from the mixing pot element. You're having like this crashing of cultures. And then that brings tension, but also fruit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have been having a big hit of the experience of moving back is on the upside, I have been very energized by the quality of interaction among the people
mm-hmm.
on the level that you're speaking about. You know, people who don't know anything about each other
mm-hmm.
are just kind of forced into this somewhat superficial but somewhat real
yeah.
necessity to interact and be civil and be intrigued.
Yeah.
And then on the other hand, everybody's getting annoyed with each other all over the place.
Yeah.
Because they don't have enough space exactly, and it's noisy and it's pretty urban.
Well, there's
urban.
Like a baseline of acceptance. Like, we're here together.
Mm-hmm.
So you must be at least okay.
Yes, and it's not always actually okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I kind of what I'm driving at is that there's a couple layers. On the more superficial layer, we make it okay because we have to interact every day and it is okay.
Right.
And we
this is something that we could learn as a political society.
Absolutely. I grew up in this city and I thrive in that kind of energy because mm-hmm. it's my baseline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and our experience, I know how to do this.
Our experience being in this quieter place was a lot of isolation, both when
Very
we lived on a
so.
Mountain and when we lived in the suburbs.
Except when we lived on the mountain, we didn't live there full time, and I really liked that distinction of being in the city and then going up on the mountain, coming back. You know, that really works for me. And being here
so
all the time. So look out,
mountain.
Coming back. But I do, when I'm here, really love being here. And I like the mobility that it gives as well.
Yeah.
I think people are more mobile in many ways, not just, you know, in their physical beings, but also in their minds and their emotional bodies. That's, you know, that's what it does engender.
Yeah, that's a resilience.
It's a resiliency, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I was talking about meditations with folks yesterday in teacher training, and they were some of the meditations that are a little, I don't know, they're not exactly psychological, but they are sometimes interpreted that way, or they feel like they're having something to do with your story. And, you know, maybe that's a fruitful little spot to talk about, because there's definitely something good that comes from psychologically being resilient, dealing, finding, understanding yourself, understanding your patterns, being mindful of your patterns, seeing what's coming up, what's triggering, what's behind this particular upset, right? Like there's something behind this upset, and it's probably more than just the existing circumstances. So there's that. And then Kriya Yoga works on this energetic level that I think it would be fair to say transcends that stuff without minimizing it in any way.
Right.
It allows you to aim for an energetic shift that changes you up in a way that perhaps makes you more resilient or more open or more attuned to whatever is coming in the next cycle of the spiral, right?
Yeah, so I'm having a interesting beginning budding of a thought about how that plays back into what we opened with, the resiliency of the people here, and what this city life does for consciousness in general. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really easy if you're in your own little space with space from other people to just kind of go into a little cocoon of complacency a little bit, you know, like just my routines and my TV and the shows that I watch and the things that I buy and what I click on. Whereas here you're sort of forced out onto the streets, and that gives some sort of a sense of, oh, there's this other thing that's kind of happening out there that I'm a part of. So anyway, put a pin in that. And what I hear in that meditation, you know, let me put it this way. So for me, the benefit of meditation, baseline, aside from all the other all the details that arise in an individual practice, is that we get a chance to observe our stories from the perspective of what I would call Jiva Atman, which is the consciousness in us that deals with the senses and the world of the senses, the incoming information, the experiences that are showing up for us, how we're navigating all of that. And when we can do a little bit of, when we can get that space to see that our stories are stories, regardless of what they are, because it's going to be so various, right? It's karmic, it's nature and it's nurture. It's all of this, the patterns that have been ingrained over generations and over this lifetime. But the first point is, and the main point for me is, to get that space and to be able to see what comes up in your mind as the drama of life on the screen of the mind, but that's not who is perceiving.
Right.
Is not the actual, that's not the perceiver. That's the perceived thing in the mind.
Right.
And I'm really making a connection with, you know, how growing up in this city with all of that going on all the time, and possibly just, you know, many other things as well in my life, but made me so aware of just that background of of consciousness mm-hmm. from a really young age because mm-hmm. I was always confronted with stuff.
Right. So you learn the role of the observer.
I learned it very fast.
I'm not much of a marketer. I should be making Facebook memes and Instagram stories, but instead I'm talking about this. I'm an artist. I learned yoga. It helped me make art. I don't make art with the same intention anymore, to be a famous musician, famous visual artist, a famous writer. I'm working as a yogi, and it seems to be what I'm supposed to do right now. Now my yoga helps me live artistically, creatively. I'm inspired by life and flexible around how to live it. I'd like to share that with you this summer in France with my fellow teachers, Wendy and Ulrika. They too have found rich, creative relationships between living and the practice of yoga. There's a lot online that markets feeling good, seeing life as though you were an airbrushed ad, providing models of yoga ability, poise, having figured it all outness, magical new versions of you. The reality is, life is full of challenge. All humans feel inadequate. The most beautiful of us feel flawed. The answer is not wishful thinking or maintaining an artificially positive, quote, yogic mood or relying on affirmation or following some number of rules. The answer is to know what life is and to respond to it in inspired ways. To live in the world you are in because that is what is. To change yourself and watch the world appear differently in your clear vision. To accept your challenge and learn who you are. Maybe you'll find you're someone famous, brilliant, beautiful, poised. But more importantly, you'll find you're perfect. You're graceful in the face of challenge. You're whole at your center. You're loving in your heart. That's what yoga taught me. That's what I'd like to teach you. I try to do that with this podcast and with other classes and training. This summer, we're going to focus on it in the safe space of a retreat. Three yoga masters humbly offering light to combat the darkness in the French countryside, easy to reach from Paris or London. Real yoga, actual happiness. Deep living. Details at peterfurco.com/France2018. Salut. So the other thing that was interesting out of our conversation yesterday was this notion of working through the challenges, gaining insight, releasing stuff out, past patterns, buried patterns, and its relationship with the samskaras.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of your samskaras, just to define, like your base of patterns that you're dealing with in your lifetime.
What did you just say? Buried patterns?
Getting rid of buried patterns?
Releasing. You know, that is, samskaras to me, are that is the samskaras.
Yeah. The samskaras are your baseline of patterns, like what you're born with, what you're going to have to confront, what you're dealing with, the baseline of what you have to deal with. But the distinction I was trying to make last night was, yes, but it's not like, oh, great, I figured that out. Now I'm done. Like,
yeah.
The things that are profound in you are going to take your lifetime to deal with, but you'll keep gaining insight about it, right? So these energetic shifts that we make through a meditation practice can bring us a new way of seeing those samskaras, a new way of dealing with them. And then perhaps you'll release a large portion of something.
Yeah. So for me, the way that, like, the one thing that helps me out so much in my own practice and in my teaching is to always go back to, of course, you know, I've been teaching the sutras and steeped in the sutras so much that that's kind of my framework, but is to go back to what the four padas are really about. And that shift between sadhanapada and vibhutipada for me is exactly that. It really relates
to the
second and third books. It really relates to this. So in the sadhanapada, we're talking about the things that we can do, right? The actions that we can take in order to get to samadhi, which is that place of transformation.
Yeah.
And in the third pada, we're talking about what comes about as a result.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important for me to remember that when we're talking about, quote unquote, and I'm going to really put it in quotes, releasing samskaras,
mm-hmm.
it's not a thing we can do.
Mm-hmm.
The thing we can do is the meditation, is all of the different practices, is showing up and doing our work and cultivating that presence and cultivating that place of awareness and that place of getting to the place of transformation, which is frankly harder than you think.
Yeah.
Because of tricky mind.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the samskaras themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then remembering that all of those ideas that we have about what it's going to be like to release those patterns and whatever that means, right? Because we're always trying to get away from suffering.
Mm-hmm.
That those are just the ideas of the mind.
Right.
Right. And about until that. You get to the place of quiet mind in that transformative samadhi experience, the release isn't going to come. And when it does come, it just comes. And then you feel it and you know it and you have a different relationship with the suffering.
Right. With the circumstances,
with
et cetera.
Yeah.
I was talking a little bit about that in my last podcast about this like magical thinking orientation that, oh, if I do the right things, then life's going to give me what I want.
Yeah.
And what it's more accurate is you transform yourself and life's still giving you what it was giving you, but you want something different. You have a different relationship with the stuff.
Yeah. You have a different relationship with what life is giving you. And then, you know, in my experience, honestly, that is when the real shifts occur.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like, in the difficult places, I just have to keep going back to my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to keep reaching out for some kind of help or supervision or, you know what I mean? Like somebody, the trusted others that I cultivate along the way to help me see what I'm not seeing and help me get to the practice that I need to be doing.
Yeah.
And then there are these moments when, you know, cultivating that state of dharana, dhyana, samadhi over a long period of time starts to make that transformative, like that, make that shift a little more easy, you know, because part of it is, I think we just don't know when we're, you know, Al made this great distinction in answer to one of the students' questions during our mini training on Friday for the sutras, where he said, when you're becoming a yogi, you have to kind of follow the protocol.
Right.
But when you're established in your yoga, when you are a yogi, then it changes a little bit.
Yeah.
And I really respect that answer a lot, which is when things get hard, even as a seasoned yogi, when things get challenging or when a big thing is coming up, you know, I think it's important to be humble enough to go back to doing the practice, doing a protocol that's like, okay, 40 days practice this.
Yeah.
And going to your teacher and going to your trusted others.
And even just doing something, even just doing some practice, you know, like I was listening to Thich Nhat Hanh, interviewed by Oprah on her podcast, and she said, do you meditate every single day?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I meditate every single moment.
There you go. I have a Thich Nhat Hanh quote that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I suddenly realized I think it is him, but that goes very much along with that, which is somebody asked him, what would you do if you were on an airplane that was crashing? And he paused and thought for a moment, and then he said, I wouldn't be on that airplane. I was like, I love that answer so much. Like, if you're meditating every moment, you're listening to that wisdom all the time, and you're just not going to get on the airplane if you don't feel like getting on the airplane. Mm. And if you're on the airplane and it goes down, you chose to be there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But most of us don't walk around with that kind of
consciousness
flowing through us.
But it's the other way that of saying that is that he's always practicing.
He's always practicing.
Doing his being mindful of every moment and not getting caught up in stories that carry him elsewhere and reinterpret what's actually happening as a part of some story about things.
Exactly, which is where you started and where, of course, students come to meditation, and that's a big piece of the learning.
Right.
Oh my God, this like crazy story is playing in my head and I never noticed it. And now I'm supposed to sit here in quiet time and listen to this crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's scary. Or sometimes it's, that's fascinating.
Right.
Right.
But, or the most amazing thing happened, I figured out that blah, blah,
exactly.
blah, blah, blah. And the figuring out part of it is perhaps interesting and perhaps useful, but it's like, that's enough.
Right.
You know? It's like, boom, 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 next moment. What am I doing now? Did you ever hear something on Peter's podcast and say, oh, I have a question about that? Did you know you could ask that question? Do you know you could sponsor me on patreon.com? And I'll absolutely answer that question first thing. Did you ever say, oh boy, it would be so nice to have a conversation about something I'm going through? Did you know you can do that? On Patreon, you can join at the genius level and get a private session with me via Skype or FaceTime or anything you want on a telephone. And we can chat about anything you want. Did you ever say, ugh, I just need a little shift in my energy so that I can deal with this one thing? You can do that on Patreon by subscribing at the mantra level. Send me a description of what's going on with you, what the challenges are around that. And I'll come up with a mantra tuned just to you to make that shift. All this sounds like a lot of advertisement, but hopefully it's that kind of advertisement that is like just telling you about something that's useful. That's what the marketing people tell me. It's okay to do this because you're just sharing. How else would people know about it, right? But in fact, I can't make this podcast without the support of listeners like you. And there's anywhere from a dollar up to subscribe on Patreon. I would love it if you would consider doing that. I sound like one of the public radio stations right now, but that's the model I decided to follow because I'm kind of like a socialist at heart. So I'm hoping that we can all do this together and that you value what we're doing on Peter's podcast and that you would step up and subscribe at any level that makes sense to you. And I have these actual reward type things that I hope you would find useful as well, right? Whether you use them all the time or you just use it once in a while. Right, because you can always change how much you're supporting me for. Thanks so much. I'm going to get back to my conversation with Wendy. Always fun. Here we go. Namaste. You know, sometimes I try to metaphorically interpret these scientific explanations of what's up, you know, and we're so individually focused. We're so much in our story that we are a being that's in a space that has relationships with all these different things. And that's certainly a very evident, you could say, obvious fact. in air quotes.
Yeah.
But just as much of a fact is we're just a part of a gigantic organism that's moving with, you know, interdependence.
Yeah.
And if we shift our focus to that from time to time, because it could be kind of freaky or it's kind of scary, I think, if you thought of yourself as part of a big organism. But it lets you see that you're doing a job, just like in a body, there's a cell that's now
right.
making you know, the hemoglobin combination that I need to carry oxygen around.
Yeah.
You know, I'm currently talking about ways to help find real happiness and deep living with
Absolutely.
You, and you're doing the same thing in your ways. And so, you know, we're all part of this bigger thing, and getting more clarity through doing practice, you find the vibhuti, the power to see that and to operate then from that space, which then leads you to the fourth pada, and you've
right.
got now clarity of seeing and of living.
Absolutely. It basically, for me, describes the process of evolution,
yeah.
right? As part of like our little karma in relationship to the big karma, which is what you're talking about. And I think that plays out in all the levels, all the realms, like in the social connections, right? In the resource connections, like how we interact with each other in terms of resources, and certainly within like family systems or community systems or anything like that. I think that seeing the yourself as the drop and the ocean, like, you know, how are you defining the ocean? Is the ocean the community, or is the ocean
right.
Is the ocean Brahman? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like it applies as above, so below. Like, it's just the same process happens at all these different levels. And it is freaky, and it is not, you know, it's not just freaky. We are so not taught that in
right.
our Western civilization. We're taught absolute individualism.
Right.
Like, what do I need to survive?
Mm-hmm.
We're not taught, what do we need to survive? But it's absolutely evident that that kind of thinking has led us into a complete, like, you know, it's funny, a word in Russian just came to my mind, tupik.
Tupik.
It just led us into the, you know, the corner that you can't get out of. But that is, I think, an educational process as well. And what for me, when I hear that piece of what you're saying, I think, you know, once you get conscious of what is going on around me and myself as an individual piece of this larger whole, then I also have the possibility to reframe or reorient how I relate to all the different parts, having that awareness that we are all part of a whole.
Right.
And a really good example, and it might not be easy, because first of all, A, we don't want to accept it.
Yeah.
Because of all the patterning and learning that we've done. So those people are not good, and I don't
right.
like their music, and I
us versus them.
Yeah. And that, you know, first of all, there's like, I'm not part of that. And second of all, I don't like that. It's not what I'm used to, or it's not what I want. Right. So there's this acceptance issue.
Right.
Right. And acceptance for me is not necessarily saying I love this, but of just acknowledging the reality of it.
Right.
It is there.
Right.
You are part of that. I don't, I mean, to take the biggest example, you know, what's going on in our government. I am part of that.
Mm-hmm.
You are part. We are all part of that, what is going on. And we don't want to accept it because we want to see it as this screwed up thing that's happening, that somebody out there who knows what they're doing should fix.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go back to democracy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But it's not that really that simple, because this is a phenomenon that happened.
Yeah.
And we pay taxes,
mm-hmm.
you know, we live in this country. We use the resources, we pay the taxes. It's happening in our community
mm-hmm.
in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And
It's an outcome of things we've been doing.
Well, absolutely, unconsciously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how do we relate to it is a... accepting it does not mean saying it's okay.
Right.
It's a completely different right. definition of acceptance.
I think I say that so many times, that around this notion of abhyasa vairagyam, you know, this doing things and being unattached to the result, it doesn't mean that you don't care about the result or that you don't care about what you're trying to do. It's this being in relationship with the other thing, and it is going to be what it's going to be, but you have an impact on it. So you have your impact. But if you expect it to be a certain way, then you're going to be missing the next thing that you can do to have an impact on it.
Very often, yeah.
Because you're still, now you're in the past. Like, what didn't happen?
Yeah.
Instead of, what can I do now? What is the thing that's being presented to me now? In because of and in spite of my entire past.
Yeah.
All the bad choices I made, quote unquote, all the missed opportunities, quote unquote, you know, all the, if only my parents had been, I had been lucky, or anything mm-hmm. that's about the past. It's like memoir material, but it's not helpful going forward unless it's a pattern that you're going to repeat again. And you look at it just from that perspective. Like, how is something from my past influencing what I'm doing now? And that requires perspective.
Yeah.
And again, practice gets you perspective. This summer, I'm going to be in Europe, traveling around, starting with Finland, where I'll be doing teacher training, but also doing some workshops in different locations around Scandinavia, around Europe. If you'd like to know where you might be in Europe, or you might have friends there who you think, I wish they would learn that kind of yoga, sign up for my newsletter, or just go to my website. You can share that peterfurco.com link, and I try to keep up to date on everything that's going on the website, okay? Including the workshops that we'll be doing in various places in Europe this summer. Thanks so much. Here we go. Back to the show.
You know, I was interested in this kind of this thing called Coursera, where you like just can take audit courses on history and pretty much anything. And I just listened to this really smart historian do an intro to some history course that I can't remember even what it was. But he said, we always think that we have to learn from history, right? So we're always looking back at history and saying, what did they do? Now I have to do, if it didn't work, I have to do the opposite. And if it did work, I should do the same thing. And he said, that's nonsense, because this, the circumstances, the conditions of what's going on now may be completely different. You know, it's so much more complex than it's either the same or it's different.
Yeah.
Right? It's really different, you know, it's just much more complex in terms of the influences and the specifics
right.
of what's going on. So he wasn't saying that we should abandon history or never know what happened in the past, but learning from history in that very concrete black and white way often doesn't work. And, you know, we see this even like with teacher trainings. You know, in one group, the one thing that wasn't working, you get the feedback and you take it to heart and you do the opposite next time. And it's not even an issue, and something else is completely the issue, right? Yeah. So you kind of learn that you get better and better, not at applying the past lessons, but at responding to the current circumstances.
Right.
More like it all kind of lays down into this, you know, wealth of experience and ability to respond to what is in a way of kind of what I would call viveka without, you know, you have all this past at your fingertips, and it's certainly going to influence how you respond. But if you don't get caught up in the things of the past as like fixed black and white lessons or something,
right.
then you have much more possibility of responding in the moment to the thing that's happening
in the
moment.
To the uniqueness of that thing.
To the uniqueness of that thing. And to me, I just was so thrilled with his little assessment because it really spoke to something that I think we get wrong a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, pigeonholing.
In our need to get it right. You know, we get worried that we're not going to please people or we're not going to, you know, somehow we're going to be responsible. But that Abhyasa Vairagya thing is right in there.
Yeah.
You know, that if you show up and you do your best and you offer your intention based on what's going on in the moment and you do your work to see that through, and then you let go of what the mind thinks needs to be the outcome, and you just kind of trust that the outcome is related to your intention and all your work.
Right.
Right. Then you open up the field of possibilities for how that outcome can best embody your intention.
Yeah. And you know, you use the word intention, and maybe this is a good place to stop. That Yogananda, he was very devotional, but he had a strong sense of yoga as being a process of willpower, that you needed the devotion to something beyond you.
Mm-hmm.
For him, it was the Divine Mother.
Mm-hmm.
But he used to say, your willpower is the determiner of what happens in your life. And you, all you have to do is put your mind to something and you will just make things happen. So in one of the meditations we were doing yesterday, it was a little bit about stuff that's unconscious. Well, it's completely about stuff that's unconscious. But you intend to let that stuff go. And it's the intention that carries the power to make things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So just what you were just saying about that intention, you know, it seems like, oh my God, how? It's not the how.
Yeah, you can't involve yourself too much in that.
You have to just trust that the how will flow through you when you align yourself by getting still and you have the intention of finding truth, finding the clarity. Satyam.
And then all your courage and all your actions and all your power goes in that direction, not in some other unconscious direction, which often gets you back in the same
in a pattern. A habit, a past.
Exactly.
A repeat of the past so that you can finally see it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And isn't that funny? We struggle so hard sometimes to not repeat the pattern.
Yeah.
And then we're still doing it because we're struggling so hard.
Yeah. So keep practicing.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
Keep practicing.
Which Patabi Joyce said.
Keep practicing and keep
Sadhyaya.
Letting yourself trust that the practice is actually working.
Ishvara Pranidhana.
Yeah.
There you go. We got it. Namaste, Wendy.
Namaste, Peter.
That's it for today's episode of Peter's Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed the mix of this and that and the other thing, and I look forward to talking with you again soon. Please support me on Patreon, and please consider coming to France. It's going to be amazing. See you soon.